Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Yeah, it was 45 years ago today that the five most recognizable notes in, depending on who you listen to, either pop music or all music, was first performed by the Rolling Stones. Ah, 45 years ago today. Ah! We're not web streaming, we're not video streaming tonight, because I still have this damn bronchitis and... last night I was just blurping all over the place and I just can't do it. So we will probably be back with video streaming tomorrow night. What the hell happened today on Wall Street? Well, the quick answer is what happened today was what happens with when the predatory capitalist pigs lose control and things go nuts. 1,000-point drop in 5 minutes? Now, what does that tell you? Does that tell you that all the little moms and pops that own stock in their 401ks all decided, hey, let's go trade some stock today and see if we can sell and buy. Okay, mom? Okay, pop? Yeah, you know. Buy low, sell high. Here we go. Let's go down to our friendly Merrill Lynch broker office. Is Merrill Lynch still around, or are they one of the companies that went belly up? Who knows? But anyway, what happened is I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. So let's turn to Prairie 2, who wrote in, a steel dome is to be lowered over Wall Street to contain the red ink. Ooh. A drilling platform at the corner of Wall Street and Broadway exploded and sank today with sticky red ink spreading across the land. It is impossible to estimate the damage this will do as it begins to wash up on Main Street. Senator John Kyle of Arizona denied that any Republican in the Senate ever favored more financial drilling. Quote, some candidates may have said something 2 or 3 years ago like, the fundamentals of the economy are sound, but that was never our policy. The real story is nearly as bizarre. It's been reported that human traders on the floor just stood and watched as the market fell over 1,000 points in less than 5 minutes. There is a circuit breaker that is currently set at the 1,050-point decline to suspend computer trading for an hour. But there is no admission so far of that happening. Incredibly, they're circulating the rumor that this panic was triggered by a futures trader on the Chicago Board of Trade incorrectly selling $16 billion of an exotic instrument instead of $16 million. This seems a bit far-fetched. Are they really describing a blowout? Didn't Halliburton cement the trade properly? It's more likely that the U.S. dollar reaching new highs thanks to Standard & Poor's hyping the Greek bond crisis that has triggered margin calls. You see, the U.S. dollar now needs to be repaid at a higher rate than when they were invested in a different currency. We do know that Procter & Gamble and 3M stock fell by half in just 5 minutes before coming back. With trillions in Fed money on loan to the Wall Street banks at zero interest, pumping up world markets through the carry trade, it was only a question of time before panic occurred. Asian markets have experienced steep declines on a daily basis, and Europe has been as well, with fears over the collapse of the euro. The fact that the market, quote, rebounded up, end quote, to only 350 points down means little. Wall Street banks could easily drive the market back up before the close, as trading would be light unless a full-fledged panic took hold and traders were willing to sell at any price. It is even possible for the Fed and Treasury to pump cash into the market directly in order to intervene and prevent a crash using authority developed after the Reagan market crash. It's been rumored that there was a lot of this done under Bush to try to hold off another crash until after he left office. You see, there really is no free market under capitalism. The capitalists would never stand for it. Crashes are okay for the rest of us, though. Prairie 2. You can go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Yeah, I heard that late today. I was helping Kathy put some bring some plants up to the back porch, the open back porch, to put in the window boxes, and I missed the whole exciting thing. I went back down to the kitchen to get a glass of water, and all of a sudden, you know, I see this stuff exploding about the market, down 1,000 points. All of a sudden, it's down 900, then 8, then 7, then 6, then 5. I thought, what in the hell happened? So as Prairie 2 points out, the story being generated now is, it was somebody at, the Chicago Board of Trade. No, it was somebody at one of the investment houses hit the wrong key. No, it was this. No, it was that. When in fact, there's a very good possibility, as Prairie 2 points out, that there was some panic today. Absolute panic. Now, this is what happens. This is how quick, if it does crash, this is how quick it's going to crash. Bada bing, bada boom. It's real scary stuff. It is to me anyway. Now, it's been suggested, where did I watch today? On CNBC, after I realized what the hell was going on. One of the business channels, somebody suggested, and maybe it was just CNN, but somebody suggested pay very close attention to the markets tomorrow. Now, I don't have stocks. I don't have any, do I, Kathy? That's right, I used to. I had 401k. No, what did I have? And it went, started to go crazy.
Well, technically, we still have XM. Technically, although I think now they charge us to keep it.
We bought XM at, what, 13? No, what was it? $11 a share, and it went up to 35, and we thought, wow! And then it went down to 30 cents. No, I never have indulged in the stock market. It's just not for me. I've had 401ks where I'm sure they were managed in the stock market, but I don't own stock. Kathy owns some stock or whatever the hell they are, some kind of financial instruments in what is called emerging markets. And she's been doing fine. She doesn't pay any attention to it. She just gets a statement every 6 months. But it's been growing by leaps and bounds. Me, I stay completely the hell out of it. I hate capitalism. I think it's a murderous, filthy, degenerate enterprise. It eats people. It destroys people. It destroys countries. And today, look what happened. Look what's happening in Greece. Now, the thing about Greece, and I'm sure Prairie 2 is already writing something about this, the UK, England, is perched on a limb, and that noise you hear is the European market sawing that limb off. England, Mother England, is about to collapse. The British, the UK, is about to go down like Greece. Oh, my God. Now, maybe Prairie 2 can send something in here, or Steve the banker, or some of our financial wunderkinds who listen to this program to tell me what the hell is going on in the UK. We'll be right back.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Today was National Day of Prayer. I haven't seen anything on the news about it. It was today, wasn't it? Yeah, it was today. And I got an email from Kay, our education affairs correspondent. And she saw something at my website, something that Kathy had written today, kind of the daily blog, what we're going to talk about or what have you. Anyway, Kathy kind of pulled out her slash and burn equipment regarding National Day of Prayer. And Kay saw it and wrote, "Mike, after reading the blog today, I had to share an internet conversation I had the misfortune of participating in yesterday. Why do I get the feeling that most of these folks are very similar to those who attend events like the National Day of Prayer breakfast? I mean, just look at the super important things they are praying for. In this case, in the case of this internet conversation, a house on a California bluff overlooking the ocean." Original post. "Okay, the sale, the one that someone with cash came in and cut us out of. It fell through. So we are back in contention. This house is above Canyon Drive with the ocean view. Say a little prayer for us." Response number one.
"Sending prayers for you. It just means God has a better house in store for you and your family."
Response number two. "Praying, praying, praying." Response number three.
"Big prayers flowing your way. We are still working on the wine country house, but hope to wrap it up this week."
Response number four.
"Prayers for you. All good things come to those who wait."
Kay writes, "If God really is the hairy thunderer that most Christians claim he is, these folks better run for the hills and fast. What was all that stuff in the book of Exodus about not coveting your neighbor's house? Or what about Jesus' admonition that the only way into the kingdom of heaven was for the rich man to sell all your possessions and follow me?" Regarding the fourth response,
"Prayers for you, all good things come to those who wait."
I want to ask this person, really? All good things come to those who wait? What about the people in sub-Saharan Africa who are waiting for water, food, medicine that will never arrive? Are you effing kidding me? Mike, this uniquely American brand of, quote, Christianity, end quote, just makes my head explode. When I think of all the people in this country and around the world who have no food, no clothing, no shelter, when I think about the devastation being wrought in the Gulf of Mexico because of greedy bastards like many of those attending today's prayer breakfast, and when I consider that these people are so arrogant as to actually think that their God gives a blank about their petty petitions, well, I could vomit blood. And that brings me to the whole concept of their God. This God evidently honors materialistic requests from American Christians for bigger, better, faster, more, while turning his back on millions of people who are abused and exploited every single day. And I am supposed to worship this deity? As Mr. Cates, the schoolteacher brought to trial for teaching evolution in the play Inherit the Wind, remarked, and I'm paraphrasing here, man created God out of his own superstitions and bigotry. To that I would add, and out of his own arrogance, selfishness, and greed. The only thing this National Day of Prayer shows me is that we are a sick nation in every respect, body, mind, and spirit. Okay. Andy in Seattle. Mike, praise the Lord, it's National Prayer Day. I, for one, prefer the hardcore Christianity that comes right out of the King James Version of the Bible. The only real Bible, as any fundamentalist would tell you. And need I remind everyone, there's not a single place in the written Word of God that allows you to pick and choose what to believe, shout glory. We could go on for hours about the joyous things in the Bible that we should not believe, but celebrate. Not only believe, but celebrate. We could talk about the murdering of children, the rapes, and everything else done in His glory, but I digress. And remember, you liberal Christians, real Christianity is an all-or-nothing sort of gig. Again, where is that passage in the Bible that allows us to pick and choose? Anyone? Praise Jesus! Hand me that snake and rat poison. The fundamentalists may be crazy, but it's just what God tells them to be via the King James Version of the Holy Bible. We may think of them as hate-filled, but anyone who's read the Bible cover to cover can tell you about God is that He has infinite wrath, that He's just aching, that's just aching to be poured out on everyone, innocent or guilty without much notice. Hallelujah, brothers and sisters! Goodbye. Only in nations like the United States and Iran is religion taken so seriously, and why not? Clinging to beliefs dating back to the Bronze Age and before certainly ensures that our country and world can progress into the future. Right? Andy in Seattle.
To the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, so Prairie 2 heard my plea, I guess. Or else it's just another act of God here on Prayer Day. Prairie 2 writes in, Japan's market is now open. It dropped another 3.75%, but is steady right now. The UK is next on the hit list for the bond shorters. Wall Street banks and hedge funds have so much money, thanks to the Fed, that they are just eating one country after another. It's great for the U.S. dollar if you're a currency trader. Not so good for the stock market. But you can short sell that too. That quadrillion in derivatives are coming home to roost. You know what you find under a roost? That's where the rest of us are, and don't look up. Well, I'm still just as confused as I can be. So anyway, thanks, Bruce. So on National Prayer Day, this is a part I don't get. On National Prayer Day, if there's one thing that's wedded into this holy lock of vampiric matrimony, it's Christianity and capitalism. I mean, those two concepts, they're both predatory, they're both degenerate, they're both anti-life and anti-human, and they are locked together. You cannot separate capitalism and Christianity. You simply can't do it. So If that's the case, and it is, while all these leaders, so to speak, and whoever attends these national prayer breakfast thingies, and by the way, the first one, of course, was put together by Billy Graham back during the bad old days when godless communism was eating at the hem of the United States. If all these people were together in Washington, D.C., praying until, I'm sure they all hoped, like Jesus in Gethsemane, little beads of blood would break out on their foreheads, although I doubt if that happened. I just don't take these guys all that seriously. Their kind of Christianity is the public kind, the kind that Jesus condemned the Pharisees, the kind of religion that Jesus condemned the Pharisees for. But anyway, I digress. So, National Day of Prayer. On this day, a day set aside by predatory capitalism to honor the deity. How does he respond? He rips a hole in their stock market so big you could drive a chariot through. I don't know. I just find it funny. God got pissed today. Their God got pissed. He said, wait. What are you all doing down there? Oh, a little mama, a hama. They're talking in tongues and passing the bag of snakes around and everything. Well, not Obama and the real Christians, but... And God sees that, one can imagine, and God says, oh, you're doing that again? Here, try this. Bow! Predatory capitalism and predatory Christianity. You tell me the difference between the two. Speaking of Franklin Graham, he is now warning. Can't this be considered an act of terror? Somebody ought to lock this guy up and give him a bag of cocaine and just let him blow his own brains out. It's common knowledge that Franklin Graham was a cokehead of the worst kind. Kind of like George W. Bush. Look what happened to George W. Bush. Bush became this delusional, dry, drunk, God talked to him, told him to invade countries. Jesus. So Franklin Graham, apparently God told him to bust up on Muslims and continue to agitate and irritate a billion people on the planet. But now Franklin Graham is warning the President of the United States, you're going to lose millions of evangelical votes. Yes, you are. He said, because he was denied entry into the Pentagon, you see, which Obama has nothing to do with. But Graham is a coke freak. He is an ex-junkie, and that means his head is still firmly planted wherever it needs to be in order for him to find a line or two. But he says, there won't be the evangelicals, my brothers and sisters, will not be at the table next time, Mr. President. We will not be there because you denied me entry into the Pentagon where I could link hands with the people who commit atrocious acts of terror all over the planet and offer them the blessings of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And you denied me that, Mr. President. Well, for that reason, Mr. President, I am going to deny you evangelical votes by the hundreds of thousands. Amen, amen, and amen. So today, Franklin Graham took his anger to the sidewalk in front of the Pentagon, praying in protest with a half dozen others while the official event took place inside. Hallelujah. He told reporters that he prayed for the men and women of the armed forces. Amen. And that he doesn't feel his statements about other religions have been offensive at all. You know, God damn Islam. God damn the thousand armed elephant of Hinduism. Hell yes. But that's not offensive. It's not offensive because, amen, there is only one true God and only one redemptive path through his Son, Jesus Christ. Graham said during his prayer vigil today on the sidewalk, it must be difficult for for Franklin Graham to have to pray on the sidewalk. Although I believe that's what Jesus instructed his disciples to go, to do. Go ye therefore into all the world, teaching. Not the kind of garbage that Franklin Graham spews all over the concrete. But he said as he's standing on the sidewalk, I just pray that this year and that in 2 years from now, the churches all across America will sign up women and men to vote. No, not to tell them how to vote, got to protect that tax exemption. But to sign them up, register them to vote, because I believe the Church of Jesus Christ can make a huge difference in these two elections. But you got to get out and vote. And if we don't do it, we're going to be in trouble. So that would be my word of encouragement. Get out there, pastors. Get the men and women of your church to register and go vote. Of course, it seems pretty clear how Franklin would like those voters to vote. Oh, my God. Oh, the marriage of capitalism and Christianity. Oh, my goodness. This is what the drug-addled John of Patmos was talking about when he wrote the book of Revelation, the marriage of the beast and the whore. Wow. Incredible stuff, man. Franklin Graham more or less calling down the wrath of the Christian God on Barack Obama. Meanwhile, you know, Franklin Graham, did he miss the fact that the stock market had 1,000 points ripped out of its very guts? I mean, who? Nobody knows who did it. Nobody's sure what happened? Well, Franklin, pay attention. We mentioned the other night that the Hutteries, those are these goofy-looking jacklegs from Michigan and Ohio, I guess. The Hutteries, those are those people that were busted because they decided they were going to kill a bunch of police officers. And then when other police officers came to seek revenge, the Hutteries were going to kill even more. Meantime, a squad of Boy Scouts armed with some minimal weaponry would probably make these Hutteries run screaming back into the caves from whence they emerged. But the Hutteries were arrested. They were taken before them. They were put in jail. They were held under enormous bond until a judge released them. And as Merle from Michigan writes, I guess they're not really terrorists because, wait for it, they're white. They're white. I love all people, Merle writes, and was raised this way, but this sounds ridiculous. Terrorists are always going to be terrorists. The judge apparently watches Glenn Beck or listens to Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, we mentioned that the other night. These guys, you know, here's some doofus that took some firecrackers and you know, potential to have really, really caused some damage in Midtown Manhattan. And he, of course, is under lock and key. This guy, this 30-year-old Muslim, will never see the light of day, ever again. His life, for the rest of his life, will be behind concrete and steel with armed guards pointing automatic weapons at him 24/7. But these 10 freaks from Michigan who decided they wanted to overthrow the government, they wanted to kill cops, you know, just a bunch of boys feeling their oats a little bit, you know? Bailiff, let them go. If I could learn and be complete, if I could walk righteously again, cause I won't get right with God. Yes, you know you've got to get right with God. Cause I won't get right with God. Yes, you know.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill. Now we're up in the big leagues. Give not turn at best.
10 before the hour. Was it last night, Kathy, we had the call from the guy in Miami that drives a limo, Milton? Was that last night? He wanted to get on me about capitalism, and he was patting himself on the back because he had 9 cars and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I got an email from Lane, writes, Mike, note to Milton, the limo capitalist. I hope that was the name I heard. Was it Milton? I don't remember. Let's call him Milton. Anyway, Lane writes, let's do a little thought exercise, Mr. Limo Capitalist. Would he still love capitalism if a monopolistic company came in and franchised overwhelming competition? They would have deep pockets and be able to underbid him just long enough to put him out of business. They'd outsource billing and administration of the company to India. They'd buy blitz advertising time on media, which they may also be a shareholder in, that Milt can't afford to buy. They'd buy fleets of cars that can be in more places simultaneously than he can. They'd sell cheap contracts to large corporations, which he, with his puny stable of 9, would not be able to service. Or let's see what happens if oil becomes so expensive his little company is no longer profitable. A large nationalized company can absorb any loss that he cannot. You see, Milton has old-fashioned mom-and-pop free market enterprise and entrepreneurship all mixed up with monopolistic capitalism, which is what we have had since Reagan destroyed antitrust legislation. Only, if one of these big companies never comes in and takes over his territory, will he be able to continue to be a small business owner? If a big company were to swoop in, then he too would be swallowed by a behemoth which does not allow true competition. No way, no how. Real capitalism wants everything, wants him out of business. And they can do it. Not because they have a better mousetrap, far from it, but because they can outfinance him or outcapitalize him through their megalithic power and ownership of many companies. Just because there isn't yet a Walmart in limousine service in his town doesn't mean capitalism isn't eating up his children's future in the race towards a second or a two-class feudalism. Milton, real capitalism hates mom and pop. And guess what? You're a pop. Lane. Well, thanks, Lane. I just never have the patience that is necessary to address an issue like Lane just did or Tom Hartman would. You know, when I hear these people, it's just like I get too pissed off immediately because, you know, I hate this attitude of I've done it all on my own. No, you haven't. Nobody in this country does it on their own, not for the past 200 years anyway. No, you don't. You know, this idea that, oh, well, I'm a self-made man or woman. No, you're not. Not ever. Not for 5 seconds of your greedy, miserable, acquisitive life. Were you ever doing it all on your own? Ever. But, you know, how do you undo years and miles of propaganda that keeps telling, you know, people who are exploited all day long by this capitalistic, religious society? They're manipulated and victimized all day long. You too can sit at the right hand of God. You too can own a huge mansion overlooking the coast of California. You too can be happy and successful and never have to deal with cancer or Lou Gehrig's disease or a stroke or a heart attack. Here's all you have to do. Wow. It's amazing. So to the guy in Miami who has the nine-vehicle limousine service, good for you. That means you're working your ass off, and you have a mom-and-pop business, and you're an entrepreneur, and good for you. Just let me offer a little advice, pal. Quit being so goddamn self-righteous, okay? Quit walking around patting yourself on the back.
Well, I came from a family of liberals, but I managed to escape and open up a limousine. But
good for you. Good for you. But just ease up a little bit, will you, pal, on how good you have it? Because it's a little smarmy listening to it. You know what I'm saying? And I doubt you'd ever call this program again if something happens. Oh, I don't know what could happen. Your insurance rates would skyrocket, or there would be some sort of medical expense in your family that puts you on the verge of bankruptcy, or, I don't know, something happens and all of a sudden all your nine limos are in jeopardy. Would you call this this program then and say, I guess I was wrong about capitalism. It just ate me alive. Anyway, I hope that never happens to you, Milton. I hope you have a great, great time running your business. I hope you make bukus of money and, all your children are apple-cheeked and happy and very, very bright, and that you and your spouse just live forever. Senator Joe Lieberman thinks he's found a workaround on the whole Miranda rights debate for U.S. citizens accused of terrorism. Huh? Strip their citizenship and send them to Guantanamo. Ah, damn, Joe. That's kind of like what happened to the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto in Poland back in the 40s. Oh, my goodness, Joe. As Casey Hunt points out, writing up Politico.com, Lieberman plans to introduce a bill that would amend a decades-old law aimed at yanking citizenship from U.S. citizens who fight for a foreign military. Lieberman said Tuesday, I'm now putting together legislation to amend that, to specify that that any individual American citizen who is found to be involved in a foreign terrorist organization as defined by the Department of State would be deprived of their citizenship rights. Does that include the KKK, Joe? Does that include the militias, Joe? Who does that include? Such a law would potentially cover terror suspect Faisal Shahzad, the Pakistani-born American citizen charged in the aborted car bombing attempt in Times Square. Lieberman said, if you have joined an enemy of the United States in attacking the United States and, you know, trying to kill Americans, I think you sacrifice your rights of citizenship. I don't know. Hadassah, can you bring me by car? Where's McCain? McCain? There is one exception to the existing law. Americans are allowed to serve in the Israel Defense Forces without losing their citizenship. Really? I didn't know that. A decades-old law aimed at yanking citizenship from U.S. citizens who fight for a foreign military. You mean if somebody, an American citizen, were to join the Canadian Army? Oh, wait, they don't fight anybody. All right, wait a minute. If someone were to, the one exception to the existing law, Americans are allowed to serve in the Israeli defense, the IDF, without losing their citizenship. I didn't know that. Lieberman said he believes the Obama administration should have used the recently created high-value detainee interrogation group to question this 30-year-old. My feeling is that if the high value group makes a judgment this was a terrorist act, the person should be turned over to the military, Lieberman said. Of course, that's not allowed under current law because if the suspect is an American citizen, U.S. citizens cannot be tried in military commissions. So Lieberman wants to change that, unless, of course, you're fighting in the IDF. If you're fighting in the IDF against those dirty, filthy, stinky Palestinians, okay, we'll make an exception, right, Joe? Leave me alone. The 2006 law that outlines guidelines for the commissions authorizes them only for, quote, alien, unprivileged, enemy belligerents, which simply means, I think, you know, people that don't wear uniforms, people that just show up, turned over, sold to American military. Those people have no rights. Now, that didn't stop congressional Republicans from clamoring to know whether Shahzad was read his Miranda rights and questioning whether a civilian court is the appropriate venue. McCain said reading Shahzad his rights was, that's a serious mistake. McCain said, I certainly would not read this individual his Miranda rights. I would not do that. I would bomb him from 10,000 feet. I would rat him out while they twisted my thumbs in a North Vietnamese prison camp, but I wouldn't let him read his Miranda rights or something like that. I don't know. What time is it? Has J.D. Hayworth won yet? Oh, God. McCain later clarified his statement. He said, well, what I was talking about was that we don't have to Mirandize somebody immediately. You don't, you know, before you charge them, there's time that elapses. What? And it's not just this poor, burned out war criminal, John McCain. New York Rep. Peter King, the top Republican on the House Homeland Security Committee, wants to know whether the Justice Department consulted with the Intelligence Committee before it decided to hold his trial in civilian court. King said, well, I hope that Holder did discuss this with the intelligence community. If they believe they got enough from him, how much more should they get? Did they Mirandize him? I know he's an American citizen, but still. God. Oh, my God. Joe Lieberman, the gift that just keeps on giving, even though the people of Pennsylvania or Connecticut tried to get rid of his ass. I know what they tried to do to me. Listen, I went home and talked to Hadassah about it. And you know what she said? I can't repeat what she said, but we decided I would run as an independent. You know why? Because then all the Republicans would vote for me. Where do these people come from? Stephen Pizzo had something to say at News for Real about the National Day of Prayer. He says, today is one of those strange, officially designated kind of days. This one is the National Day of Prayer. Ah, religion, what a bloody blessing it's been for mankind. Wherever you find religion, you find trouble, and today is no exception. The son of preacher Billy Graham is keeping up the tradition. He prayed outside the Pentagon. What got Franklin, Steve writes, son of Billy, in so much hot water at the White House is that he keeps dissing other religions, particularly Islam. Apparently Islam's brand of crazy is an offense to Graham's brand of crazy. So he got his pompous ass locked out of today's Pentagon cluster prayer. Just how arrogant is this pontificating bag of wind? In retribution for being the first administration since Truman to diss the Graham brand, son Frankie is ginning up an evangelical movement to kick Obama out of office come 2012. Anyway, Steve writes, if I offended any of you who think a National Day of Prayer is a good idea, good, because I'm offended by the disturbing reality that in the 21st century, public officials and Elmer Gantry witch doctors like the Grahams still believe that beseeching spirits for help makes a shred of sense. Why not sacrifice a few chickens and goats while they're at it? Makes about as much sense, but at least afterward, everybody could have a nice barbecue on the White House lawn. You gotta love Stephen Pizzo, don't you? Mike in Southport, Florida sent this in. Mike, today I made a final trek to the beloved shoreline that I have lived on or near since 1967, the stretch from Gulf Shores to Port St. Joe. It was my chosen home after having lived all over the world from London to Sydney and from Tucson to Fairbanks. I've watched the outrageous population growth over these white sands for 2003 and dismissed my dismay by acknowledging everyone moving here must have the same fine taste as I. On this beautiful spring day, the Gulf from Panama City Beach still appears blue with no sign of the pending death. As I stared at a peaceful horizon miles off, I swear I saw dozens of dolphins rise from the water, climb skyward, and disappear into the clouds. I think they know something that we don't. So long, and thanks for all the fish. In fond remembrance of Doug Adams.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. This Jan in New York City sent this to me, and it just cracks me up. As you know, the chief suspect in this case of the failed Times Square car bombing is Pakistani American Fazil Shahzad, who's confessed and everything. And much of the media has latched on to Shahzad's Muslim faith and his Pakistan identity, making, you know, inflammatory remarks and suggestions about Muslims and Pakistanis. CNN contributor and red state maniac Eric Erickson complained that the words Muslim and Islam are, quote, not mentioned enough in stories about Shahzad. He wrote, quote, it really is pathetic
that you're more likely to see the words racist and Republican together in the newspaper these days than terrorism and Islam. And hate radio broadcaster Neil Bortz tweeted, OMG, the Times Square bomber is a Muslim. Shocker. Who would have believed it? And the cover of the Washington Post published Express features a black and white photo of Shahzad with the sensationalist headline, Made in Pakistan. Yet, one fact being ignored in the American media's sensationalist narrative about the failed bombing, thanks to Think Progress, is that the man who was responsible for police finding the bomb was a Muslim. The UK's Times Online reports that Aliou Niasse, a Senegalese Muslim immigrant who works as a photograph vendor on Times Square, was the first to bring the smoking car to the police's attention. Here's the way the UK's Times Online reports it. Quote, Aliou Niasse, a street vendor selling framed photographs in New York, said that he was the first to spot the car containing the bomb, which pulled up right in front of his cart on the corner of 45th and Broadway next to the Marriott Hotel. He said, quote, I didn't see the car pull up or notice the driver because I was busy with customers. But when I looked up, I saw that smoke appeared to be coming from the car. That would have been around 6:30 p.m. I thought I should call 911, but my English is not very good, and I had no credit left on my phone. So I walked over to Lance, who has the T-shirt stall next to mine, and told him. He said, we shouldn't call 911. Immediately, he alerted a police officer nearby, said Mr. Niasse, who was originally from Senegal and who has been a vendor in Times Square for about 8 years. End quote, the UK's Times Online. And as Think Progress goes on, as the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights notes, quote, South Asian and Muslim communities may yield useful information to those fighting terrorism. Arabs and Arab Americans also offer the government an important source of Arabic speakers and translators. The singling out of Arab, South Asians, Muslims, and Sikhs for investigation, regardless of whether any credible evidence links them to terrorism, will simply alienate these individuals and ultimately compromises the anti-terrorism effort. Reflecting on Niasse's good Samaritanism, Muslim American author Sambul Ali Karamali writes, quote, it's somewhat consoling to know that the man who first noticed the smoking Nissan Pathfinder and sought help is also Muslim, a Senegalese immigrant. I grew up Muslim in this country with Muslim friends and non-Muslim friends, and there was very little difference between the two groups. We were all American. End quote. But, you know, a piece of garbage like Eric Erickson or a degenerate psychopath like Neil Bortz, they don't care. You know, why make the distinction? Bortz is another one of these right-wing millionaires who made his fortune the same way so many of these right-wing media millionaires do, and that is by stomping on the bodies of poor people and black people and the homeless people and handicapped people and unemployed people. You know, Bortz's lessers, people not as good as Bortz, because Bortz, you know, pulled himself up by his own bootstraps. Yeah, right. Slimy bastards, all of them. A Muslim, huh? Mekatse Newspapers has a little breaking story here. There's no credible evidence that terrorists trained Shahzad. That's according to one U.S. official told McClatchy, quote, there's nothing that confirms that any groups have been found involved in this for certain. It's a lot of speculation at this point. End quote. Shahzad may have, at the most, had incidental contact, quote, quote, with a terrorist organization, and he may have been encouraged to act, said one of the officials who declined to elaborate further. Four U.S. intelligence and counterterrorism officials and two other U.S. officials with knowledge of the case spoke on the condition of anonymity, yada, yada, yada. If you believe what has been leaking out of the interrogation of this man, you come to realize that apparently he just flipped out. He just had enough of seeing
Pakistanis and Afghans blown into red mist by predator drones and an American military invading his country and killing his people for no reason, none whatsoever, and did what you would do, good patriot, patriotic American. He decided to get some revenge.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. I haven't seen in the past 6 or 7 hours any updates on the situation in the Golfo de Mexico regarding British Petroleum's attempt to salvage and protect its investment by putting some sort of a dome, a square dome, over this erupting gusher that they created in the floor of the ocean. So I don't know if they've succeeded or not. I certainly hope they do, not so they can continue to suck oil out of the earth and make billions once again, but so that the damage already perpetrated against the natural world by these predatory sons of bitches can stop creating further destruction. But the there was a closed-door session briefing for members of Congress 2 days ago, wherein a senior BP executive conceded that the ruptured oil well in the Gulf of Mexico could conceivably spill as much as 60,000 barrels a day, more than 10 times the current flow. 60,000 barrels a day. And as reported by the New York Times, the scope of the problem has grown drastically, drastically since the oil rig exploded. Now the discussion with BP on Capitol Hill is certain to intensify pressure on the company, which is facing a crisis similar to what the Toyota Motor Company had with uncontrolled acceleration. No, New York Times, it is not. This is not about this demon BP. It is not like the acceleration problem of the Toyota. This is an unstoppable, to this point, unstoppable destruction of the whole planet. It's a little bit different, you morons, from what happened to Toyota. And then the Times puts it this way. Amid growing uncertainty about the extent of the leak and when it might be stanched, pressure on BP intense. Had to sneeze. Pressure on BP intensified on multiple fronts Tuesday, from increasingly frustrated residents of the Gulf Coast to federal, state, and local officials demanding more from the company. This is the part I like. The company considered a broad advertising campaign. They considered an advertising campaign. What were they going to do? Notify America that
we here at BP truly do believe in Beyond Petroleum. We, well, there was this thing that happened down in the Gulf, and we certainly will stanch the flow of oil. Just a minor event thing. Look over here. Don't look down there. Quit looking at those goddamn photographs from Noah. Please quit looking. Quit going to the internet. Here, look at our slick ad campaign. Look, we have a double truck ad. That means two pages. In the New York Times, in its full color. The company considered a broad advertising campaign, but top BP executives rejected the idea before planning even started. A BP spokesman said, quote, "In our view, the big glossy expressions of regret don't have a lot of credibility," end quote. Instead, the company has dispatched executives to hold town meetings in the affected region. And it has turned to lower-profile social media outlets to trumpet its cleanup efforts and moves to organize volunteers. It's always volunteers when it comes time to clean up capitalism's destruction. Ever notice that? Ever notice that? As long as the capitalist monster is sucking resources or sucking labor or eating the planet, and nobody's paying attention. Oh, well, you know. Who gets rewarded? The executives, the shareholders. But once there is a disaster, and there is always a disaster, once that we need some volunteers. We're going to send our executives right down there to the Mississippi Gulf Coast, down there to the Gulf of Mexico. That's where we're going to go. And we are going to trumpet our cleanup efforts. Look, look here. Look at my case. Look at it. Isn't this a nice trumpet? Look at this. Or something like that. I'm trumpeting our cleanup efforts. Why, do you realize? What have you cleaned up so far? Well, what have you done to stop the destruction, the death of the Gulf of, we threw some stuff on the surface of we threw some stuff out there, a chemical dispersant, 100,000 gallons we did to try to break up some of the millions of gallons of petrol that we've released. But guess what? Chemically dispersing oil spills solves the political problem of visible oil, but not the environmental problem. Joseph Rahm, writing at Salon.com. I spoke to Karis Mitchell-Moore, a professor at the University of Maryland's Chesapeake Biological Laboratory and one of the writers of the toxicity chapter for the National Academy of Science report. She explained that dispersants are, quote, a molecule that looks like a snake. The head part likes water and the tail part likes oil. The dispersant pulls the oil into the water in the form of tiny droplets. And that means subsurface creatures, from oysters to coral to larval eggs, that might never have had significant exposure to the oil, are now going to get a double whammy, getting hit by the oil and by the dispersants. Worse, the oil droplets are now in the form that looks like food to filter feeders like oysters, which otherwise may only have been exposed to the far lower levels of dissolved oil components found under a typical oil slick. The droplets of this mess can also clog up the gills of fish. Mitchell-Moore noted that, quote, oil contains a whole suite of toxic chemicals, including known carcinogens. The dispersants can lead to far greater accumulation in living organisms of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, oil-derived toxic compounds that were found in mussels 19 months after one spill in which dispersants were used. After the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill, a study found these chemicals had an impact on the developing hearts of both Pacific heron and pink salmon embryos.
So all of a sudden, you'll remember the other day, Shell, or I'm not Shell, but BP said, oops, okay, all right, never mind. We're not going to send any, we're not going to spray any more of this out there. Whoops, whoops. Look over here, look over here. We're not going to do that anymore. Well, BP continues to acknowledge its responsibility to shut off and clean up the oil. It is being barraged by government officials and civil lawyers who are redoubling efforts to ensure that the company's legal obligations are clearly defined and strictly enforced. Two words for you guys. Well, actually, one new word, ExxonMobil. What did they do in Prudhoe Bay? Up bar in Alaska. Huh? How much of that was settled? What about the civil penalties? The criminal penalties? Were there criminal penalties? What about all that? It is 21 years later. Does anyone who wrote this article for the New York Times think for one second that that case has been settled? That ExxonMobil, with its billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of quarterly profits, did the right thing? Please. This is capitalism. This is collateral damage. Collateral damage. If we are drilling for oil and there is a thing, an event that happens that destroys the planet, well, that's collateral damage. Of course, that's not going to happen. It might destroy the Gulf of Mexico, but for Christ's sake, the whole planet? Oh, get real. And besides, we have to pay $75 million, so what's everybody bitching, complaining about? One of the BP executives, one of the company's top crisis managers, gave a briefing on Tuesday for reporters from Gulf Coast newspapers and the Associated Press, in which he said he wanted to win the hearts and minds of the people. I want to win the hearts and minds of the poor, miserable, collateral damage freak bastards that live in the area that we've decided to murder. Maybe some suggestions, and I bet that the
Truth Seekers, here's the Truth Speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. What is interesting to me is the fact that there is a cap of $75 million, a federally mandated, a congressionally mandated cap of $75 million in the amount paid in economic damage when something like this happens, drilling accidents. You got to wonder, don't you, who do you suppose made sure that cap was put in place, $75 million. Do you know what that is in terms of profit for a company like ExxonMobil? What is that in a good quarter? Is that 2 hours worth of net profit? Three? Okay. Is it a day's worth of net profit? These rancid capitalist bastards have committed an act against the entire planet that can only be described as, I don't know how to describe it, an act of terror that's indescribable. It defies description. And the consequence for this is what, a $75 million cap? On what they have to do.
Oh, well, we're going to take care of everything. We are really responsible. We are going to send our top executives down there and let people know, hey, we're going to buy a new shrimp boat. Yes, we are.
Bastards. Bill Nelson, Senator, Democrat of Florida. Frank Lautenberg and Robert Menendez, two Democratic senators from New Jersey, have introduced legislation to raise that cap to $10 billion. $10 billion, and to make sure that the new limit applies to this bill. Oh, won't the lawyers have fun with that one? No, you can't do retroactive penalties. Well, it's not a penalty. It's just a cap on the cleanup. Oh, no, it's a penalty. And you see where this is going to go. Into court. For freaking ever. And $10 billion, are you kidding me? Who comes up with these numbers? What's the value of a shrimp? What's the value of algae? What's the value of a manatee or a pod of porpoises? What's the value? What's the value of a seabird? What's the value of somebody who makes their living from the sea along the coast of the Gulf? Well, who does this? Who decides how much this stuff is worth? Who sits down and says, okay, well, let's see what we have here. We have 37 septillion plankton involved. And, let's see, we'll ascribe to each plankton a net worth of, let me think, $0.001 American dollars, of course, to each plankton. So, I mean, how do they do it? How do they do it when, how do they assign value when they step into something like the Gulf of Mexico and destroy the food chain? Destroy the laboratory that provides oxygen for the planet. How do they do that? How do these companies that go into Brazil and destroy the rainforest, or Indonesia and destroy the, how do they set a value? How do they decide how much you're going to pay for the hardwoods or the destruction of, well, there's all kinds of animals in the Amazon, even some that look like human. They are. Yeah, they run around. They're naked. Can you believe that? Damn. And they live in little villages. And when they've hunted out the area, they move on and build another village. Isn't that quaint? But we need the land to raise beef cattle. So I'm sorry, the little forest people are going to have to move on, and the fish and the Gulf, and it's all going to have to move on, isn't it? And somebody has the balls to call me and tell me there's nothing wrong with capitalism? Are you serious? Are you serious? BP has significantly stepped up its lobbying on Capitol Hill, spending nearly $16 million in 2009, more than triple what it spent just 2 years ago, according to data compiled by the Center for Responsive Politics, a watchdog group. Well, how much more do we have to give you? Senators, members of Congress, if you'll form a line over here to the right, yeah, right over here to my right, I'd like you to introduce you to two of our leading executives. They're the ones that have the keys to the vault. Now, how much do you people want? Please remember, we're a struggling oil company. We're only the third biggest in the history of the human race. And how much do you want? Don't get all pissy now. How much do you want? This is just collateral damage. I mean, you guys do this all the time over in, where are you now? That's right, Iraq and Afghanistan, Pakistan. You know, you're blowing people away. These are just damn fish. These are just plankton. These are just single-cell organisms. Why are you getting your bloomers in a wad? Ever feel like you would just, you'd like to get one of these suits in a room someplace and have a chat? I'm serious. I'm not talking violence here, but just to say to them, you know, you filthy bastard, how dare you? How dare you do this? And you know what the executive would answer? He'd say, well, Mr. Malloy, how dare you continue to drive a pickup truck. And just because you live in Georgia, insist on having air conditioning. How dare me? How dare you? This is the Malloy Program. We're going to open the lines in case you want to call in. The number is 877-996-2556. A couple of emails here about the containment cap. Justine in Maryland writes, Mike, regarding why there isn't any news on the containment of BP's oil volcano, I think Rachel Maddow said on her show tonight that the siphon that will be used to transfer oil from the cap placed over the primary underwater source of the oil probably won't be ready until the weekend. And, of course, this type of system has never been used at the depths of the latest spill, so no one really knows what the outcome might be. And then Greg in Florida writes, Mike, from the early reports I'm getting, the fumes and natural gas are so intense at the site that they are overwhelming workers working on the cap. There are fears of another explosion. The captain of the ship deploying the cap, Demi Schaefer, claims all it would take is one metal-on-metal scrape to set off the fumes. I'm trying to keep up with what's coming in, but currently the information is sketchy and contradictory. I don't know who is taking this so-called cap out, whether they are BP employees or probably not. They're probably contractors. But you certainly have to admire their courage. I mean, I certainly have to admire their courage. They are standing on the lip of hell while they're doing this. And as Greg just pointed out, slightest spark. Pew! Well, anyway. Well, it's very hard to focus on which it's very hard to focus on which catastrophe to focus on. Which catastrophe to focus on, or something like that. It's really getting out of hand here, isn't it? Huh? You getting scared? Okay, not scared, but are you getting deeply, deeply, deeply concerned? I damn sure am. I mean, from this ricocheting global economic whiplash that we're all experiencing, well, not all of us. The Wall Street bankers are just making tons of money. That's what capitalism feeds on. You know, the term, they got very popular several months ago, or, all right, a little more than several months ago, a couple of years ago, is the term disaster capitalism. And it's almost like unnecessary repetition. Capitalism is a disaster. It is. I defy you. Well, never mind. I'm not going to issue any challenges. And I get these half-wits who call in here and, you know, try to make sense out of something they don't have a clue about. But disaster capitalism feeds and it creates disasters and then feeds on those disasters. What is the greatest gift to the capitalistic system? Time's up. War. Because it destroys everything. Which means everything has to be rebuilt. Not just the infrastructure of the nations that are leveled, but also all the weaponry and the munitions that are used up. Because otherwise, I mean, when you make munitions, when you make bombs and bullets and planes and tanks and flamethrowers and death and destruction, if you don't use them, it's not like cans of peas that you put out in a supermarket and people come and buy them. Oh, I need more cans of peas. Everything capitalism touches, it eventually destroys everything, including the planet. We get that, don't we? I mean, we do get that. And, well, not 70% of us. 70% of us continue to live in some geeky, freaky world where Obama is from Kenya, and there is no such thing. It's just a liberal plot to destroy capitalism. You crazy bastards. You crazy, pitiful bastards. Oh, my God. As you choke to get death. Eventually, and you watch your children choke to death on air that's no longer breathable because of what the capitalist system has done. Are you still going to say, Obama's from Kenya? Pitiful bastards. You really are, you right-wingers, you Republicans. Just pitiful. You teabaggers. Good God. But it's just, it's a disaster. Every time I try not to now turn on CNN. I know. Until, after a morning exercise, after making the beds, after feeding the dog, after glancing at the editorial page of New York Times, after, either taking Molly to school or saying goodbye when Kathy takes her to school or whatever. You know, I try to stall it, and then give me the clicker. And I turn it on, CNN. All right, where? What? Show me. What? What disaster? What disaster is going on today? What's melting down today? What is the next direct threat to my life? And, unlike the Bush years, this stuff is real now. John Ashcroft and all these freaks that worked for Bush, they would make stuff up.
Oh, well, we're raising everything to purple.
Oh, yeah, why?
Because. Don't ask. This classified is up to purple. Get your plastic sheeting and your rubber bands and your glue sticks. And don't forget canned tuna. Oh, and don't forget duct tape.
That was almost comedic. It was comedic. It was almost funny. It was one could sit back if you're an American back then after the shock and horror of what happened on September 11, 2001, when all of a sudden we were stomped right in the face. We got stomped for a change. Jesus God, it was horrible. 3,000 people dead. Because of the incompetent leadership that we had on the moment of the attack and for years leading up to the attack. But after that, just like the Project for New American Century said on their website before the attack, we've got to have another Pearl Harbor in the United States to advance our agenda. That's what we need. We need another Pearl Harbor. And there's still people out there who send me emails and say, well, how can you suggest that the Bush administration had anything to do with this? Are you insane? And a lot of that comes from people on the left. No, I'm not insane. I may be crazy, but I'm not insane. So after September 11, 2001, remember everything. Every time you turned around, you know, you go in the bathroom to take a pee and you come out and they just elevated the color-coded terror bar. Where are we now? Purple. Mauve. Oh, my God. Where it explode. What happened? Nothing. What do you mean? Well, they caught a couple of guys down Liberty City, one of the Miami in-town neighborhood. Yeah, what were they doing? Nothing. They were talking about blowing up the Sears Tower. Talking! But now, it's all freaking real. BP has decided that Armageddon is not going to occur in the Middle East. It's going to occur in the Gulf of Mexico. It is occurring in the Gulf of Mexico. What does BP really stand for? Beyond Petroleum? No. British Petroleum? No. Does it stand for Beelzebub Promises?
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day.
Past the hour. Some phone calls. Chuck is in Knoxville listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight, buddy?
All right.
I wanted to talk about the habitat that's involved that we're talking about. When I was a kid, we used to ride down to Panama City. We had a beach house on the beach just west of Panama City where it was quiet and private.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember... you know those paintings you see in the stores that are cheap? You know, you can pick them up for $40 in a frame. And they've got the white sand and the sea oats and the sun is shining through the clouds and it's shining through the water and you can see that particular green and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Oh, I know. I've been going down there for 25 years.
These are some of the finest beaches in the world.
With no comparison.
When you walk on the sand is pure white. It's like sugar sand.
And it crunches.
It squeaks like baby powder.
I know what you mean, pal.
When we dug our well, it was 300 feet down. It was more than 300 feet. We hit a petrified forest at 300 feet.
Oh, my God.
This is how old these beaches are and how long it took to generate that fine of powder from seashell.
Mm-hmm.
Millions, hundreds of millions of years in the making. The Everglades is thousands of square miles of mangrove swamps and sawgrass teeming with little tiny bugs and fish to the tune of trillions.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is what's at jeopardy here, and that's assuming that it doesn't get out into the Gulf Stream and get around the peninsula of Florida and on into the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me that given all of that, all that, if you will, God gave us, that these people could sit there and say, when they're putting these things together, there's 4,000 of them in the Gulf, and to this day, nobody knows except the corporations themselves how successful these switches are. That they say to themselves, well, we're not going to put a percussion switch on there because that's $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about how many hundreds of millions of dollars that particular oil well has brought in over the years. But that little fraction of a cost is much more important than all of that.
Yeah, and Chuck, thanks. We're coming up on a break here. I appreciate what you had to say. It's very very poignant, and very real too. But this is what capitalism does. Why bother with a $500,000 switch? It's $500,000 because it's a crapshoot. That's the way they look at it. If the lives of thousands of people, the livelihood of thousands of people is at stake, you know, the fisher people, if the environment, literally the environment in which they're working, if that's at stake, well, you know, you roll the dice. That's what capitalism says. And if the dice come up snake eyes, in the past, all you did was take a look around, kind of cluck your tongue, and move on to someplace else to roll the dice. And you just keep doing that. You see, that's what capitalism does. Capitalism must have ever-expanding access to the natural elements that you find around the planet. They've got to have it. Natural resources, that's what we want first. And we don't care, the capitalists say, how we get it. And if people die and jobs end and nations sink beneath the sea and environments are destroyed and the marshes turn into sand, we don't care. Because that's not what we're about. We leave that to the socialists. We are capitalists. We have one thing that matters on the bottom line, capital. Somebody's capital, money, whether it's dollars or Deutsche Marks or francs or yen, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But collateral damage in this case might be, well, nobody knows yet what it's going to be. But it's going to be something. And it's going to be something irreplaceable and irreversible. Just a moment ago, I read you something from Greg in Florida about the fumes and natural gas so intense at the site where they're trying to put this cap on that they're afraid of an explosion. Now I get this from Greg in Florida. Tony in Maine writes, Mike just heard on an AP report about the containment dome in the Gulf. The report says the plan is being stalled because the noxious fumes are so intense they fear another explosion, which could mean sending a four-story concrete metal container slamming down onto the pipeline. And one factor that no one seems to want to discuss is the upcoming hurricane season. We're only 3 weeks away from what the National NOAA is calling an above-average hurricane season. Now, what will happen when one of those storms comes in contact with this ever-growing slick? Not only will we see storm surges pushing this oil and the toxins ashore, but there's probably a possibility these storms could pick up this toxic mess and dump it inland, contaminating freshwater supplies. And the politicians think $10 billion is going to cover this? You got to be kidding me. And what's up with the New York Times printing up these stories in defense of BP? Reminds me of the period of time leading up to the Iraq War, where they were complicit in hiding the truth about weapons of mass destruction. Tony in Maine. And Judith in Asheville, North Carolina writes, it seems to me that once again, safety and protection of our country was an option, or was an oops. How many disasters are we to understand and forgive? There are a large number of oil rigs in the Gulf area. The Natural Resource Council has been screaming about it for years. They're in danger from weather, fire, terrorism. Yet Obama's Homeland Security czar and agency head had no plan. The oil companies don't care about our shores or our lives. They lied to Congress and the people about being safe. Jail them. Is it too expensive to protect our company or our country? But we need to be present all over the world with our military. Who are these idiots? Not Obama, not BP, then who is to blame? Obama fails to consider us and should be impeached. He's to blame for ignoring our safety. Too busy with his wars and banksters. Capitalism is one thing. Abuse of the land and sea for profit is another. BP should be denied access to our oil and land. They're liars and greedy. Judith. Well, Judith, I agree, except when you say capitalism one thing, abuse of the land and sea for profit is another, you're defining capitalism. So it's not one and the other. They're both the same. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. But I get your email. And Mike writes in that BP stands for Betrays Planet. Freddie is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Freddie.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You're only the second person I've ever really called into to talk to on a talk show. I'm 46. I'm living in San Francisco. And I've been doing some research on the internet, you know, going back to the beginning, you know, of America lying to its people. You know, like in 1916 when the Jews in Germany made a deal with the British to get the Americans in the First World War, and if they did it, that the British would give the Jews Palestine. I mean, I can't
What? No, wait, no, wait, no, wait, no, wait. Freddie, I don't... In the first place, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're looking at some kind of history, I guess, that I haven't read yet. That's A. B, the Jews in Germany? Ah, Jesus, God. No, thanks, man. Thanks for nothing. Who do we have here? Joshua's in Fort Worth, listening online. Hey, Joshua.
Well, hi, Mike. I've been listening to you for a long time now, off and on.
Yeah.
This whole Gulf situation's got me scared to death.
Yeah, and, me too.
And hearing that letter that you read a few days ago, first of all, I want to get this off my chest. I did some Google research, and I found out that there was somebody in that letter referenced to somebody who works on that coast-to-coast AM radio with Art Bell, that conspiracy theorist. So I think that maybe... Look, let's think about what Carl Sagan had to say. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So I'm not just ready to believe that the world's going to die just yet. But also, I did another bit of research, and I found that scientists think that 50% of the world's oxygen comes from the oceans. Some scientists think it's a third, so I'm not sure if it's a majority, but maybe we don't really know. But Mike, consider this. I consider myself pretty much an atheist. I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness, believe it or not.
Say that again.
I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, really?
And I consider myself from time to time, I debate between agnostic and atheist. So anyway, I think you'd find me pretty interesting. But anyway, suppose that this leak were to go out of control and scientists estimated that in 100 years the planet would die. What do you think the religious fundamentalists would do? Do you think they just go on and say, well, let's go ahead and rape the earth, like James Watt, the Secretary of the Interior for Reagan, used to say? because the Lord's going to come and rapture us away. I mean, that's the kind of things that I'm thinking about here. You there? Hello?
Okay, Joshua couldn't hear me. What happened there? I think it was his phone. Regarding the piece that I read the other night, Paul Noel, I don't know the reference to Art Bell, Art Bell's program. Paul Noel is a software engineer. He's a contractor. He's not in the Army, but he's a software engineer for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal in Alabama. According to his little bio here. And the thing that I read yesterday, or I don't know, I guess it was last week, I don't think that was being laid out as, you know, a prediction. What is going to happen? I think the point he was trying to make was the potential for an absolute disaster is at hand. It's not just him now. Come on, it's not just him. Granted, he may have been the first one to broach the subject of this is not a spill or a gusher into the ocean that is going to be contained with any efficiency. We've never done this before, was his point. There is debate now as to whether or not BP was drilling 5, 10, 15,000 feet below what their permit said. I'm talking about below the floor of the ocean, beyond what their permit said. In doing that, you are going into an area where the pressure, I don't know how it increases exponentially. I don't know. If you're, if you're 1,000 feet below the crust of the earth in this particular geological area, and then you go 10,000 feet, is it 10 times more pressure or 1,000 times more pressure? I have no idea. But if they were drilling, and who's to know, right? Who's to know? The only people who will know will be the people who are running the BP gauges who looked at the dials and said, well, our permit says 12,000, but we're down to 18,000. Keep going, boys. I mean, who knows? So, I don't write this guy off. My first experience with what he wrote was on the internet, the web. I understand about the web. The web is 90% horse crap. Okay. 80%. All right. 70% horse crap. So I don't know this guy from Adam's house cat, but when I read his piece and then read it on the air, he was talking about the potential, the possibility, the reality within the scenario that he was laying out. If it happens, we're doomed. If it doesn't happen, we're not doomed. It's that simple. I mean, I put that stuff on the air so you can listen to it. I'm not trying to be Art Bell. I have no idea about, fruitcakes and freaks and what do you call that thing? Long distance vision or something? viewing? Remote viewing. That's right. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about reality. We're talking about a hole punched in the floor of the ocean that is now spewing thousands upon thousands of barrels of oil into the ecology of the Gulf of Mexico. You don't need to be a guest on Art Bell's show to suggest that the possibility for mega death exists with that event. You just don't have to. I mean, come on. And again, there are more and more people in the scientific community. I don't know if they're geologists or if they are environmentalists or what they are, but the consensus now, as this thing goes on and on and on, the consensus is this is a disaster of proportions that can't be calculated at this point. And within those uncalculable proportions, there also exists the possibility of something none of us want to think about. At least I don't. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. It's 10 before the hour. Mark in San Diego wants to know, where's the Drilla from Wasilla? Sarah's lipstick is all over this dipstick. The election in Florida and the appointment of Cheney Bush resulted in America being ruled by an oiligarchy. Is it fitting that the state will be surrounded by oil now? People need to remember how they felt when they watched Avatar and Mobilize. What do we do next? Mark in San Diego. Well, there's Mark in San Diego on the phone. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, you basically touched on all my the witty things I wanted to say.
Well, you brought you wrote them to me.
Well, I just remember when that election was going on. I remember thinking, "Wow, people don't realize what is coming down the pike." And you know, we were prone to hyperbole and saying, "Wow, we're going to die," you know?
Yeah.
And you can go there, but it's just so amazing that it has worked its way back around, mm-hmm. you know, because if Gore were in power, I can't foresee that they wouldn't have taken some sort of additional measures to protect the environment, you know, no matter.
Yeah, you'd think. I'm just agreeing with you. I do agree with you.
You know, it's incredibly frustrating. But one thing I want to say is that remember how I want everybody who's listening to remember how they felt when they watched Avatar. And I know you did, so just fess up. And, you know, okay, where do we put our energy, mm-hmm. you know? And don't just attack the messengers like the Cassandras, you know. I use Facebook kind of as a weapon, and people put nice stuff up there, but I'm trying to get people to think and make phone calls. And, you know, if we know where to focus, I think we can do something. If everybody's focusing on the same little atrocity du jour, I think that we can actually break through, you know, if they get 3 or 4 million phone calls, because these people are around the country, and hopefully they're buying podcasts from the Mike Malloy Show, you know.
Well, I wonder how many people are calling the people who are in charge, at least as a result of elections, stolen or not. You know, I wonder. We have no way of knowing. Has the White House gotten a million calls? Has, you know, the Senate Environmental Committee or whatever it's called gotten a million calls? Who knows, Mark?
I just try to make sure that everybody does something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that once people move over that little tiny tipping point and make a phone call and they get through to somebody at some office who listens to what they have to say, they begin to feel empowered and they get to have a tiny sense of what it's like to be an active citizen. I think we're just so numbed out. We're so purchased out. And here's some good Toledo news. Crystal Bowersox on American Idol, her dad was a beryllium worker at a beryllium plant there. And I got to know her when she was a little girl writing songs. And this is a great thing because she can be an artist who can change the world. She's a, you know, anyway,
I remember the gypsum mines outside Toledo. I don't remember the beryllium, though.
Well, you know, my dad was a steel worker at Interlake. And when I was a kid, I was 10 years old. I just remember going to my neighbor's house or a friend's house, and there was this huge shake. You know, we thought explosion, you know, and it's like, which is cool, really. It's cool. We're thinking, is it the oil refinery? Is it the steel mill? Or is it the shipbuilding company? They were all in place and I saw where the smoke was coming up and the flames, and it was the steel company right where my dad worked. My dad got sick and went home. I got there before the firemen did when I was 10 years old, and I saw 8 of his friends blown apart.
Oh, my
God. I stumbled onto that, and then they came and grabbed me. The firemen grabbed me and pulled me out.
Ugh.
And so when we start raising hell around the world and bombing cities, you know, we have to be aware of what it does to people's minds, you know. I mean,
sure.
I'm a well-adjusted person, but after 40 years, I still have nightmares about that event, you know.
I'll bet you do.
There you go.
All right, Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
All right,
okay.
Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, Toledo was, God only knows what happened to all of us who spent time in Toledo. I grew up there and lived there until I left permanently. But I remember at one point, my mother lived right across the street from this huge Sun Oil Refinery in East Toledo. Huge refinery. And every time I go to visit her, you know, I could smell whatever those chemicals were that was used to change crude oil into gasoline. And I always thought they smelled kind of good. Oh, what's that? Wow, it makes my eyes sting, but it's, I don't know, it smells kind of good. And my mother had a series of German shepherds that kept dying because they lived in the backyard. I'm serious. She tried to take good care of them, but they just kept dying. And I think later, of course, my mother lived to be almost 90. So, I mean, say what you want about living across the street from an oil refinery. Of course, she didn't live that long. I think it was only about 6 years. In dog years, that's 42 years, and I think three dogs bit the dust there, but not my mother. But what he was talking about, Toledo, oh my God, you could find anything in Toledo that was being dug out of the ground or milled or converted or changed, or, and the chemicals, oh, the chemicals. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.